Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse Talk Show. We are talking about Al-Quds Day and how the tides are turning in the favor of Palestine. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, dear friends. We are talking about Al-Quds Day. May Allah bless you wherever you are. We hope you had an excellent Al-Quds Day rally. We are here in the studio talking with Sayyid Agha Ali Reza from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, who is going to talk to us a little bit about how the tides are turning in the favor of Palestine in the present day. We're going to go ahead and start and invite him. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Agha Ali Reza. Welcome to the Islamic Pulse Talk Show.
Thank you so much for having me, inshallah.
Jazakallah, Agha, thank you so much again for taking time out. You know, the last talk show that we had, which was before the Al-Quds Day rally, of course, was very profound, talking about various different variables surrounding the Zionist regime and the oppression that's happening at the hands of the Zionist regime, and the oppression that's linked to this ideology of global Zionism, as you had brought up. But we had ended the last talk show, on this idea how the tides are turning, and I kind of left a cliffhanger so that we'd go ahead and talk about that. But before we go ahead and talk about this idea of how the tides are turning in the present day, you know, we kind of have heard this idea that the, you know, the Zionist ideology and the Zionist state is like a cancer, right? And a lot of times this is taken in the media, by the mass media, to be something incredibly negative and, you know, incredibly inflammatory and, oh my God, why are you guys saying this? I wanted to put forth this question right in the beginning to you. Is why are we calling the Zionist entity, you know, a cancerous entity? And why is it? Because many Muslim scholars have echoed this statement, you know, across the Muslim world. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Let me recap a bit. So in our last session, we talked about how defending Palestine is defending the entire soul of humanity and of universal human values. Then we talked about how Israel and the Zionist entity is the collection of all the different instances and flavors of oppression that exist, and is kind of a accumulation of all of the oppressive and tyrannical experience of the Taghut into one focal point.
Right.
And therefore it becomes in itself a petri dish where they can kind of develop their strategies in order to export them to other places and replicate them to other places as well. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, when the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution fight against and resist against the Israeli regime, they are in fact defending the entirety of humanity. They are even defending the American people, whether or not those people understand and realize this at this point, but they will in the future. So in order to kind of elaborate on this point, and this is linked to the cancerous nature of Israel, Imam Khomeini Rizwanullah Ta'ala alayhi, he said that Israel is a cancer that needs to be uprooted. Now the interesting thing
I'm sorry, I know we were going to go into that discussion, but this previous point, this idea that when the Islamic Republic and when the Islamic Revolution and, you know, when the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he fights against the Zionist regime, this is, you know, one day or the next, or indirectly, I don't know how you want to put it, this is also fighting for the rights of the oppressed people in America, the oppressed people, I don't know, in Canada and Australia,
Africa,
the UK,
throughout the world,
and Africa, throughout the world, right? And I just wanted to just kind of talk just a little bit, open that up just a little bit, right? This and because it made sense based upon what we had previously spoken about, right? Is that when you are able to eradicate a very bodies and very manifest conglomeration of oppression, which we had said is the Zionist regime, you know, and you are able to win in that battle, then you are able to go and confront the smaller battles the world, you know?
Absolutely.
If you wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about that, how somebody might say, you know, Sayyid Agha Ali Reza, what are you talking about? How is it possible that if, you know, Islamic Republic of Iran is fighting Israel, that this means that, you know, they're also indirectly fighting for the oppressed people or the African Americans in the United States of America?
Absolutely, inshallah. So when we say that the Islamic Republic, when it's fighting Israel, is fighting for the entirety of humanity, There are certain, there are different dimensions to this issue. In fact, we need to do a bit of understanding the enemy in order to understand what's going on. The Zionist entity is the manifestation, it's the front office, it's the marketing face of the global Zionist project. Now, the global Zionist project is spread throughout the entire global arena. And it, in fact, many of their most influential people are sitting in governments throughout the world, right? Now, the thing is, this Zionist project has different dimensions to it. There's an a dimension of economic exploitation, where economic systems are created so that the downtrodden, the poor, become poorer, and the elite, that 1% that the American people once realized, and inshallah will realize again in the future, that 1% kind of sucks the soul and the blood and all of the nourishment out of the majority of the population in order to maintain its own affluent and over inflated kind of lifestyle, right? Then there's this other dimension of economic injustice, which links with military and with overt injustice. How does that happen? The money that is stolen from all of these nations, the taxpayers' money that is stolen from these nations, the oil money that is stolen from these nations, where does it go? It goes to two places. It goes to three places, in fact. First of all, it goes for the cementing and for the consolidation of the Zionist rule throughout the world, through those lobbies, through the bribery network, through the network of just placing money into politicians' hands, into the hands of people of influence, and then maintaining that hegemony that they have in terms of politics, right? Then it goes towards funding military campaigns throughout the world. So if you have people, it goes to the what is called the military-industrial complex, right? So it goes to the entire idea of having an export-based economy, which is centered on ammunition, which is centered on armament, which is centered on the export of war, on the export of genocide.
Sure.
So if you see, like, for example, Boko Haram in Africa killing innocent people, if you catch one of those, and if you look at the guns that they're using and the bombs that you're using, you'll find a tag made in USA or made in Britain or made in Germany or in France or in any of these other Taghuti countries.
Yeah, even in the recent riots in the Islamic Republic of Iran, the weapons and the knives that they found, it had made in USA right now.
Exactly, right? And then there's the third aspect of it, which is cultural, which is what in our own terminology we call istihmar, making people into donkeys, like taking away and stealing away their rationality so that the victim doesn't realize that he's the victim, right? So it's a kind of this extreme network, this widespread network, which creates communal and global Stockholm syndrome. So you're being destroyed by the American regime, for instance. You're being exploited by the American regime. Your resources are being stolen. Your generations are being destroyed and wrecked by the American regime. Your culture is being appropriated or destroyed, but still you believe them to be the good people, right? These are at least the three prongs of this strategy. So when you're talking about Zionism in this manner, you realize that Zionism, with this global agenda, it focuses in and kind of the focal point of all of its activities comes in the Zionist regime, in Israel. So when you're fighting Israel, what you're doing is that you're engaging this entire Zionist project at a front where it is most sensitive, where it is most vulnerable. So you're hitting it where it hurts. This is the Achilles heel of the international Zionist project. So when the Islamic Republic or the resistance front, they fight Israel, they are in fact diverting attention of the Zionist establishment from those other instances of oppression, and therefore increasing and aggravating and in fact accelerating the downfall of this establishment.
Excellent. So even though I opened up a big can of worms apparently, but it's interesting. I think I'll have to hold you to yet another talk show to talk about this Zionist project, this global Zionist project itself. It seems to be a quite complex and profound and comprehensive thing.
People in the past used to say that these were conspiracy theories, but now And this is a part of the psychosis of criminality, that a criminal reaches a point when there is no punishment involved. He reaches a point where then he becomes overt in his criminality. He doesn't try to hide it anymore. We are, and this is a tawfiq from God himself, we are living it at a time where then no one can say that you're talking about conspiracy theories. It's so overt now. They declare it themselves.
Yeah.
They give interviews. They come on television in their speeches. They say, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. We're bailing out the banks. They are the one person. They are the important people. We're going to sell all of this ammunition to all of these nations throughout the world. This is how we keep up our economy. Right? This is how we make America great again. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So the masks are off now.
Right, right.
So alhamdulillah, no one can accuse us of being conspiracy nuts. This is not a conspiracy, for example, talk show anymore. 40 years ago, maybe that would have been something that we would have to like engage in and kind of rebut. But now it's so clear, anyone who
because they're saying it themselves.
Because they're like, they're...
This is our global
with this adamant disrespect towards the majority of the world, because they believe in their hearts that they are so powerful that no one can do anything against them. But at the same time, they're afraid of the Islamic Revolution and of the resistance front.
Right, right. So, Sayyid Agha Ali Reza, you were talking about this idea of the cancer, you know, that and you were explaining how it is that we call the Zionist entity a cancerous tumor.
Absolutely. So Imam Khomeini coined this phrase. He said that Israel is a cancer that needs to be uprooted. So, and Imam Khomeini was a person, he was a scholar, he was a philosopher, he was a mystic, he was a jurist. He was a person who would not just choose words
randomly,
or without due and diligent attention. Right. So when you look at cancer, cancer is something that festers and then grows and multiplies and takes over the cells that are adjacent to that cancerous cell. Israel is not an isolated project. Even if you think about it rationally, why would international Zionism invest so much in an isolated project? The only reason would be some kind of a biblical excuse, but that is not really how these guys work, right?
Yeah,
because they don't believe
these
in
are the
God.
Same guys, as we had said, they're
exactly.
they're pushing the LGBT agenda.
The
so
worst kind of
about
atheists
that?
In the world are the Zionists. The worst kind of atheists in the world are the Zionists. Militant atheists, and to a chronic and psychotic level, their hatred for everything that is divine and sacred. So why are they investing, why are they creating this sensitive area where they can be, where they are so vulnerable, and kind of focusing in all of their efforts, all of their experience, all of their investment into one spot? These are the people who taught us not to put all of our eggs in one basket, because obviously...
Yeah, this is what they taught us,
Right? This is what they teach in economic class and management classes.
They put all their eggs into Israel.
So why are they doing this? Isn't it illogical? One of the answers that shows you why this is logical and this is part of a strategy is that Israel was never an isolated project. Even from the very beginning, they had this slogan of Israel from the river to the sea. And that was just the beginning. Because once Israel was established from the river to the sea, then it would start expanding. That would be the beginning of the expansion.
Right.
Alhamdulillah, Allah did not allow that to happen, and it will not happen, and inshallah, Israel will fade out soon enough. But the idea behind Israel was to create this focal point of energy, this nucleus of festering cancerous cells, then which would then pop out and then replicate themselves in adjacent areas, and then those festering cells would do the same again. So like cancer, it will grow. So you see Imam Khomeini's words, there was wisdom in it, right? He could see the future. He could see how they were planning to work with Israel. Now, to give you a tangible example.
Well, on a very simple level, I know your example is going to be much, you know, it's going to be much better.
Personally.
On a very simple level, even if you look at the map of Palestine over the last 70 years, you see that these illegal settlements are these small dots. In our words, cancer.
Shaitan.
And they keep on growing and growing and growing until they've started to take up, for example, all of historic Palestine.
Absolutely.
Like a cancer model, if you were to look at it.
And the interesting thing is the growth pattern, because these people are very media savvy. So they try to manage perceptions throughout the world and kind of corrupt those and manipulate those so that no one realizes what's going on. their growth model is slow and steady. So it's like
It
is like the Quran says, "Khutuwat al-shaytan."
Yeah, slow
small, tiny steps, so that you don't realize what's going on.
So you don't realize what's going on.
So when they occupied Palestine, they started off with a limited region, and then slowly it grew and grew and grew, and now the entirety of the Palestinian nation is living in an open prison in Gaza and the West Bank. But in outside the limits of Palestine, the idea was to grow Israel. Or have proxies of Israel throughout the region.
These are the tangible things you were going to talk about.
The tangible example was the so-called Caliphate project, as written within one of these documents that were leaked by the CIA documents, the confidential documents that were leaked during Hillary Clinton's time, I believe, through WikiLeaks or some other source. There, they had said that one of our projects is to create a Salafist caliphal regime in northern Syria and Iraq, right? Where was this experience coming from? Where was this, where was the case study that was first implemented and then was sought to be replicated in other lands? It was Israel. The same model of bringing in criminals from the entirety of the world, bringing in genocidal psychopaths from the entirety of the world, creating a false ideology that had no historical roots, creating a fabricated ideology with no historical roots in order to unify these people from different lands, from different nationalities, from different tongues, in order to create this strange Frankenstein's monster of an army that would then take over Syria, then take over Iraq, and then expand towards Iran, towards Kuwait, towards the Gulf nations. The idea of ISIS, or Daesh as we call it, it was a replication, it was a duplication of the Zionist project of Israel. So the idea was to create these tiny Israels, pockets of Israel all over the region. And then these Israels would expand, connect with one another, and then create this huge cancerous map of a Muslim brand, apparently Muslim brand of Zionism, which, as I said, that confidential document said, a Salafist republic. And it wasn't even traditional Salafism. It wasn't even Saudi brand of Salafism. It was a completely new, corrupt and deviant ideology which was created by the Zionist establishment. Completely fabricated, completely new, an innovation from the get-go. And this idea, and this was supposed to expand. And if this had taken root, then they would have exported this to other countries as well. They would have exported this not only to Muslim nations. They would have exported this towards the countries that have been, towards Georgia, towards all of these countries that were previously part of the USSR. Then they would have expanded towards places that are not very stable, like Afghanistan. Then they would have expanded towards Pakistan. They would have expanded towards India, towards China. And this cancer would have just grown, especially if, God forbid, they had been able to somehow isolate or neutralize the Islamic Republic. Then there would have been no stopping this cancer. It would have grown like a menace, this diabolical menace, taking over the entirety of the globe. So one of the instances of the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution and the martyrs of the Islamic Republic and of the resistance front protecting humanity globally from the threat and the menace of Zionism is the fact that they were the people at the forefront fighting Daesh, fighting ISIS, destroying this terrorist diabolical manifestation of utter nonsense, of utter insanity, and stopping this cancer from growing out from those from the walls of Israel, from the borders of Israel, and taking over the entirety of the world. If this had happened, if God forbid this had happened, then Americans would not have been safe in America, the British would not have been safe in British, the Africans would not have been safe in their own countries, the Arabs, the Muslims, the Sunnis, the Shias, even the Chinese, even Southeast Asia, none of them would have been able to escape, because then this was essentially a regime, an idea, an ideology which inherently wished to grow and export its criminality throughout the world. So when you had people like Shahid Qasim Soleimani,
well, Well, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah. When you had people like Shahid Qasim Soleimani and Shahid Muhandis and all of the other martyrs of the resistance front giving their blood in order to extinguish this fire, they were in reality fighting Israel, in reality fighting the American regime, and they were protecting the entirety of humanity. And this is not just something that we are saying. If you remember, Time magazine, Economist, Newsweek, they were printing Shahid Soleimani's face as the champion of the war against terrorism,
Yeah, against terrorism,
So why such short-term memory, right? Mm. And now, once that project has been destroyed, all of a sudden you see that they're boycotting and they're censoring the face of this champion, the name of this champion, from their so-called liberated and free social media.
Sayyid Agha Ali Reza, so, you know, of course, with the names Daesh and the Zionist regime coming up, it was kind of a natural progression to get towards Shahid Hash Qasim Soleimani, Shahid Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, their companions, the resistance front in general. You know, one of the things that people, unfortunately, I think, you know, they're receiving the wrong kind of information. That information leads to the wrong kind of thinking. But some of the things that they say, unfortunately, they say that, oh, this whole, you know, protection, I'm sorry, this whole supporting of the Palestinian cause by the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic's establishment and Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, this is all just a political ploy. You know, I mean, if you'd like
it's to... It's all due to vested interests and due to... Sometimes they say it's Persian expansionism. All of a sudden, a person who is from Arab descent, who is a Hashemiyun, according to Sayyid Hasan Nasrullah, Hashemiyun, Qarashiyun, the most pure of the Arab tribes, the Sayyid from the progeny of Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself, so all of a sudden, this person wants to revitalize and recreate the
Persian Empire. He should actually be recreating the Arab Empire.
The Arab Empire, right?
Based upon his heritage and ancestry and all those things.
Such nonsense within this propaganda. But to answer it in a more rational manner...
Even though I like the first manner.
In a more like serious, in a more serious tone, if you look at the policies... taken by Imam Khomeini, adopted by Imam Khomeini, Rizwanullah Ta'ala Alayhi, even before the revolution, and then the continuity of these policies throughout these more than 40 years of the Islamic revolution, under the, and now under the leadership, obviously, after Imam Khomeini, under the leadership of Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Hafizahullah, we see that they, one of the constant focuses of the Islamic Republic is the Palestine issue. And over again, Imam Khamenei has said that we will support the Palestine issue and the Palestine resistance in every way and form possible. So he's not even mincing his words. He's not saying that, no, it's only diplomatic support and it's only cultural support. No. If we can provide them with weapons, we will. And they have. The fact that today Palestine is not limited to throwing stones, that they are not... so limited to just having these rudimentary weapons that they can make in their own garages and in their own backyards. Now they have missiles, now they have rockets, now they have drones, and now they're attacking Israel in a manner that is creating, totally driving this Zionist entity insane. All of this is because of the Islamic Republic, and I am quoting people like the Prime Minister of the government in Gaza. I'm quoting people like Ismail Haniyeh saying that Shahid Qasim Soleimani, who was Shahid al-Quds.
He was
the Shahid of Quds. He wasn't the Shahid of Iran or some other place. He was Shahid of the central battlefront, which is the battlefront of the Palestinian people. And across the board, we have so many, alhamdulillah, now is the age of the internet. You can search this and you can see there are so many Palestinian leaders, and alhamdulillah, and they're all Sunni brethren. They're from the Sunni Brotherhood, right? They're our brothers in faith in Islam and from the Sunni denomination. And all of them repeatedly thank Iran, thank Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and thank Qasim Soleimani for their unashamed, unlimited effort to support the Palestinian people in every way and form necessary. But the question here is, if someone hypothesizes that Iran is doing this for some sort of vested interest, for some sort of pan-expansionist policy and agenda, then we would like to ask them that what is the advantage gained by Iran in these more than 40 years by following this policy? Everyone throughout the world agrees that Iran, being an old civilization, the Persians, they are expert chess players. So they don't move things around without knowing what they're doing. They're not emotional. They wouldn't just like do something out of religious rhetoric as well. So they are keen strategists, right? And especially this is something that is pushed forward and peddled by Western sources. And it kind of supplements and completes that other narrative of this being a vested agenda of the Iranian government, right? Okay, so let's assume that these two points are true. So what has Iran gained in the last 40 years? Or what does it stand to gain in the next 40 years? If you look at Iran's support for Israel, it has cost Iran so many sanctions. Iran's support for Palestine. The cost of this support has been crushing, so-called crushing sanctions. It has been Iran being cut off from the global economic system. Iran being boycotted culturally, even in the sports arena at times. Iran being censored, Iran's opinions being censored globally. Iran being called a pariah state, a rogue state by some of the apparently materialistically powerful nations in the world, governments in the world. Iran being denied its legitimate share in economic welfare. Iran even being denied medicine, cancer medicine, medicine for children suffering from some of those extremely terrible diseases that, like the butterfly syndrome or something of the sort.
I mean, it's the overall enmity of the whole world.
Exactly. Like it's the entire
the majority
palette.
Of the world.
It's the entire palette of everything that the enemy could bring onto the table in order to suppress a nation is already there.
Yeah.
It has suffered internal strife fermented by Western intelligence agencies. It has suffered like almost every 10 years or 8 years. There's some sort of internal trouble that kind of pops up out of nowhere. And then all of the social media in the world and all of the media sources in the world and all of the governments of the world are suddenly they become humanitarian and they start supporting. It's interesting, like some of these French actresses who were cutting their hair in support of these few Iranian women who weren't at all representative of true Iranian women. Now that you have all this trouble in France itself, with more than 3.5 million people on the road protesting,
they have no hair left to cut off, right?
They have no hair left to cut off, so obviously they're not doing anything right now. So they're sitting back and enjoying, because obviously humanitarianism and support for civil rights only is something that applies to Iran and
these,
nowhere
these
else.
Protests in well in Israel itself, but also in France, in the UK, in Germany, all across Europe, these are quite serious protests.
It's becoming a global phenomenon because people slowly, and not holistically, but slowly and in certain sectors, are waking up to what's going on. And as Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei predicted many years ago, the social strife and the instability that the West wants to sow into the Islamic Republic, into the countries related to the resistance front, this will backfire and this will go back into the heartland of Europe and America. And that is what happened. Shortly after the statement by Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, you had this movement against Wall Street in the United States. And then it's just continuing sporadically and continually. You have these huge protests against economic exploitation by their own governments, by cultural exploitation, by other forms of exploitation that they, in fact, force upon their own populations. Because we need to understand Zionists, they have no loyalty to anyone. So you should never believe that the American regime is loyal to the American people. The British regime is no, they're only loyal to themselves. When they're not even loyal to their own prophets historically, then obviously they're not going to be loyal to these serfs. That right, is how they see so, the local population.
So Sayyid Agha Ali Raza, right? So here we talked about how it's definitely not a political ploy, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, so what does the Islamic Republic have to gain after? Uh-huh. So all you have gained and attracted all this enmity, mm. right? What are you gaining in return? Even though I know you've talked about this, but still I'd like to, you know, pose the question directly.
So interestingly, to answer your question, first of all, we've demonstrated that no material worldly benefit has come out of this entire endeavor that the Islamic Revolution has had. And there is no foreseeable worldly benefit as well.
Right.
And at the same time, the Islamic Republic has put all of its eggs into this basket.
Right.
So it's not like a hedged investment that they are like supporting the Palestine resistance and also supporting other resistances other in other parts of the world and just trying to create dissent throughout the global scenario. Something that, like, for example, the Soviets used to do in their times. They used to create these...
Or the Americans or the Americans NATO do. And these guys in the
creating proxies all over the world without any, even without ideological affiliation. So, no worldly advantage to this point. In fact, a huge, colossal degree of worldly disadvantage.
Sure.
And then no foreseeable worldly advantage as well. No foreseeable worldly advantage as well.
It seems in fact, this itself would show you the sincerity of the Islamic
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So if you look at the future, the thing that you can predict from a rational point of view is that the pressure on the Islamic Republic and on the resistance front will only increase.
Sure.
Because obviously the Zionists won't say, oh, okay, we surrender.
Yeah, hands up.
After many millennia of being psychotic psychopaths, we all of a sudden realize the error of our ways and we are going to just going to go into the mountains and pray to God, Allah from and become like righteous saints. No, that's not going to happen. They're going to fight to the very end. Like the parable of Fir'aun, of the Pharaoh in the Quran, that even when he saw that Musa was the one, alayhi salam, was the one who had split through God's mercy the sea, he still went into the sea after Musa. What kind of a sane individual would go walk into that trap, right?
I mean, at that point, you should think these are people of God. We should just turn back.
They just turn around
and go back to our own lives.
These people are out of our league.
Yeah.
So just go back.
They're splitting the oceans.
They're splitting the ocean, right? And obviously, they're not splitting it for me. They're splitting it for themselves. So if I go in, they're going to stop. Even if you don't believe in God, you can at least believe in Musa being something supernaturally very capable. But that psychosis, that doesn't just, it does, that psychosis, because there's this element of narcissism in it.
Yeah.
Ana rabbukumul a'la. I'm the greatest of all divine beings, right? He can't admit defeat. So the same is true for the Zionists, because this is the same psychology, right?
Yeah.
So they're not going to back off. And they're going to keep increasing pressure upon the Islamic Republic and the resistance front. So no foreseeable worldly benefit in the foreseeable future. So... why? Why do this? And we know that they're not irrational people. They're very good at what they at strategizing. So why do this? So the only rational explanation is this. They're doing it because of their faith. They're doing this because of their ideology, because of their Islamic ideology. They're doing this because of their religious duty to God. They're doing this because of their firm worldview that is based on true human values, on Husseini values. Where Imam Hussein stands and he says, it doesn't matter if I am if I conquer or not. It doesn't matter whether I am victorious in the worldly manner or not. I will stand on my principles and hayhat min az-zilla. Inna dayy ibn dayy kad raqazani baina ithnatayn baina az-zillati was-silla wa hayhat min az-zilla. I know that I am standing between zilla, between
humiliation
and the sword. And death and martyrdom. But I know one thing. Imam Hussein, the son of Ali, hayhat min az-zilla. And now you have a son of Ali again. You have a person from the same progeny, believing in the same Imam, following the same Imam. Yes. Interestingly, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, if it comes to a situation that Karbala, that there comes to a situation that they are able to somehow attack us, then they should remember that this will be a repeat of Karbala, not of some other event. We will die before we let go. And Sayyidina Rasulullah said this. He said, "Lan natakhalla." Sorry about that. "Lan natakhalla an Palestine abada. Lan natakhalla an al-Quds abada." Right? You can kill us, you can destroy us, you can bomb our mosques throughout the world, you can put sanctions on us, you can play around with politics and try to push us into a corner. But whatever you do, we're not letting go of Palestine. Because this is our religious duty. This is what our jurists, our foremost Islamic scholars have understood to be the will of God. And they will establish this will of God and will be act according to it, no matter what happens.
And even a humanitarian cause. I think any free-minded, justice-seeking, truth-seeking individual, if they look within themselves, excuse me, even if they're non-Muslims, right? They will be able to see the clarity of the truth and they will be able to see the reality on the ground and realize that this land should be given back to the Palestinians. And
absolutely.
That this is,
absolutely.
Is something that's in the fitra of these individuals. Even
absolutely.
If it's
anyone looking at this issue from an objective point of view, and in fact I'll kind of explain how an objective point of view is exactly the same Islamic point of view, because there is no differentiation in truth.
And it's subjectivity.
And it's
right?
subjective. Yeah, There's no subjectivity in truth, right? So, but if someone is not from an Islamic ideology, but is an honest, good, virtuous person, a person that is justice-centric, a person who yearns for justice, they will look at this issue and they say, ah, not only is this the most important issue in the world, but I need to raise my voice. And that is what's happening throughout the world. You have people from different denominations, from different inclinations, all gathering together to support Palestine.
Well, this is where I wanted to take the talk show now, right? And I kind of wanted to complete that metaphor that you brought up, right? So when the forces of Pharaoh, they see that this miracle has happened and this, you know, the river, the ocean, whichever one it was, it has split open. And, you know, these relatively poor people are kind of going through this, you know, seeing that miracle should have really opened his eyes and said, okay, hands up, let's just go back and, you know, do with whatever what we were doing before, rather than going through. Kind of adding to that, so I think that that miracle that the present day, you know, Fir'auns should look at and be wary of is how the tides are turning in the favor of Palestine, despite, you know, the massive amounts of financial aid and, you know, media power and military might that these guys have, and that all of these arrogant powers of the world are supporting this Zionist entity. Despite that, the tides are turning globally, and even in Palestine, the Palestinians are stronger. So to me, that splitting of the river is this turning of the tides in the favor of Palestine, where these guys, they really should give up at this point in time. But as you said, that they won't, and that's going to ultimately lead to their own destruction, their own hands,
Pharaoh. Exactly.
If you want to talk about this towards the end of our talk show, is how the tides are turning in the favor of Palestine, not just in Palestine, but even on a global level, more importantly.
Absolutely. So as our Yemeni brothers in the Yemeni resistance say, there was this interesting thing that one of their leaders said. He said that when all of the resources in the world are on your side, when all of the military in the world is, you know, on your side, when all of the so-called superpowers in the world are on your side, the media is on your side, and you're still failing and you're still being defeated, then know that God isn't on your side. It's simple derivation.
Then know that God is not on your side.
Not on your side. So when you look at the entire, as you said, this huge, unprecedented investment into the Zionist project, which has worked, it is really unprecedented in history. The amount of money, the trillions of dollars going in, the amount of man hours going into the media campaign of creating this narrative and trying to like force it into the skulls of humanity, and still you see human beings waking up globally. Not only the Muslims, not only the expansion of the resistance front itself, resistance fronts. Began with the Islamic Revolution. So it was confined to the borders of the Islamic Revolution.
Right.
Then Shahid Mutawassilian and others, Shahid Himmat, they went and trained some of the resistance of in Lebanon. So it expanded there, right? And then you had Imam Musa Sadr and Shahid Chamran and so on and so forth. It expanded there. And then again, for a period of time, we saw that it was kind of limited to these two areas. And many of the people who were like kind of weak in their ideology, they were saying, okay, so
this is like a Shia
affair, right? And then out of the stubbornness and the stupidity of the enemy, Allah provided us. Through the stupidity of the enemy, Allah provided us, the Islamic Revolution, the opportunity to legitimately, according to human values, according to human ethics, expand. And now you have this entire network of resistance front groups that that become like, inshallah, a huge army for Imam Mahdi whenever he reappears, inshallah, ajallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. So now the resistance has expanded from Iran to Syria, to Iraq, to Lebanon, to Palestine itself, obviously. As you said,
Palestine
from being just kids
throwing
stones to now they have these rockets and missiles.
Yeah.
And they are defeating the Iron Dome. And all of the Zionists are perplexed. What's going on?
They force the Israeli regime to go into ceasefires.
Going to ceasefire over and over again, right?
Yeah.
And now it's expanding to Yemen and to Bahrain and to other places in the world. And you have this huge, our brothers in Nigeria and in Africa, what a huge cultural resistance that is.
True.
And despite the oppression of the Nigerian regime,
you have this
peaceful cultural resistance of Sheikh Zakzaki Hafizahullah and of all his followers. Mm. What an enlightened resistance that is.
Mm.
What a glowing symbol and example for the entire African continent.
Mm.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. So you have this expansion. Then beyond the perimeter of the formal Islamic resistance, you have you have people in the Islamic Ummah waking up.
Sure.
You have people like in countries like Pakistan,
in countries like
Pakistan,
even in Morocco, which has normalized relations with the Israeli regime.
Exactly.
The people came out and protested.
Exactly. Tunisia, even after all of these the instability that is currently there, the people after their revolution, one of their core points was resistance to Israel. Right.
Mm.
So it's expanding throughout in other countries, and not only is it expanding in terms of this narrative.
Mm.
There is this other expansion, which is a psychological expansion.
Sure.
The idea that when other countries see the Islamic Republic resisting and successfully resisting and still developing, in fact, developing at a pace which is unprecedented amongst nations in contemporary times,
right.
They find this confidence to be able to speak up to America.
Mm.
So you see this president in an African country lecturing his European counterpart, right?
Mm.
Where does this self-confidence come from?
Mm.
It comes from the fact that in the back of their minds they know, well, you have been, Iran is slapping you around. Iran, it's a big nation.
Mm.
Yemen is slapping, no, that is a big nation. It's Palestine, Gaza is slapping you around.
Mm.
You want to come here and tell us that you're the boss?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
So you have this revival of global confidence amongst the downtrodden people. You have this waking up of the South American continent, which America used to believe to be its backyard. They used to change regimes
regularly, at the
flip of a switch, right?
Yeah.
And in the most barbaric manner.
Right,
right. You had Pinochet and you had that other dictator in Paraguay and other places killing hundreds of people overnight to just kind of completely destroy the opposition. But still, now, you have this emboldened resistance and a very adamant and steadfast resistance in Venezuela, in Cuba, in Peru, in other countries, and it's expanding.
Mm.
It's expanding in South America as well. And then you have large countries which aren't ideologically on the same page as us, but at a certain point in terms of negating a unipolar world, all of a sudden they have realized that they can't just sit back and wish that the Americans would become more humane and would allow them to have a part of the cake.
Right.
China and Russia and other countries, they realize that this is a rabid dog. It needs to be put down.
Yeah.
If it's not put down, it's going to take over, it's going to expand NATO into Finland, then Sweden, then Ukraine, then it's going to come up with an excuse to occupy Belarus. And then it's going to come into our own lands, create some dissent, create some protest, and then say that the local population is trying to, and then break parts of Russia out, and do the same with China as well, right? So because of the Islamic Revolution, because of this resilient resistance of the Islamic Revolution and the revolution front, these people are realizing that not only is it possible to stand up against the Zionist establishment, but you can do it successfully. And there is no other choice.
Yes.
There is no other choice apart from breaking down this idol of new pharaonic rule over the world.
Neo-barbarism as
and then on a grassroots level, you see people like activists.
Academics, scholars, religious figures, family men, family women.
And with everything to lose, like those professors, as I mentioned, those professors in the United States, these politicians, some of these politicians in the in Britain, in other places, comedians, artists, with everything to lose, because especially artists and comedians and people in the media, if they're cut off, then how will, be, will they be they able to have, like, obviously, with their lifestyles, their savings will evaporate in a matter of seconds, then how will they, but they're still like, they're fighting this Goliath and still saying these things. And obviously, I'm not saying that they have become a majority there yet, but this minority is a vocal minority. You have pockets of Jews for Palestine throughout the United States.
And
you,
it's increasing over time.
And it's increasing over time. Yeah. And the interesting thing is, the more Tawhid pushes back, the more these guys become resilient. So I remember I was talking to one of these activists a while back when I used to be active on social media, many years ago in fact. And we came to a conclusion. We said that Palestine is the litmus test for the in terms, this is what he said, the Palestine, supporting Palestine and supporting the cause of Palestine is now, has now become a litmus test of whether you still have a human soul or not. So if you still have a human soul, if it's not completely been drained out by the Tawhuti system and they have not completely turned you into a zombie, a thoughtless zombie who's only just going from dollar to dollar and from like lust to lust and from enjoyment to enjoyment, or just going around in this perpetual circle and cycle of hunger and waste and consumption. If you're not that, if you have an inkling of humanity still inside, then you'll be gravitating towards the Palestinian issue. And this is a kind of a awakening, and I'll call it a spiritual awakening as well, because it deals with the soul of humanity, right? So concluding this point, you see how the Islamic Republic's resilient, steadfast, and constant and continuous support for Palestine has actually not only led to this awakening worldwide, but it has also led to the revitalization of basic human values. It has led to the dismantlement of global apathy towards oppression.
Mashallah.
See? So a person who's living in the United States, a university professor, right? A media worker, a person, an artist, a painter, a writer, an author, they have affluent lives. They have no need in order to jeopardize their social status. But that awakening, that spiritual awakening inside them, that crushes their apathy, that crushes their ignorance towards, and their this state of being willfully ignorant towards global oppression, and forces them to speak.
So Sayyid Agha Ali Reza, we have, ran out of time on the program. You know, we want to thank you for coming here in the holy month of Ramadan, you know, mashallah, talking about important points surrounding the issue of Palestine and how the tides are turning. I don't know if you have any last words you'd like to say, inshallah.
I'd just like to echo what Imam Khamenei said recently.
Sure.
He said that we had said previously, he quoted himself, he said that I said previously that Israel would be over in 25 years, right?
Right, right.
But it seems that the Israelis are in a hurry to go out of existence. And in the words of one of the leaders of the resistance front, it would be very, very beneficial for the Israelis to learn how to swim, because the only way they'll be able to escape this global awakening of humanity is that if they can jump into the Mediterranean Sea and try to escape
inshallah,
by that group.
Inshallah. Jazakallah, thank you so much. The clock is ticking for the Zionist regime. Dear friends, thank you so much for joining us on the Islamic Pulse Talk Show as we were talking with Sayyid Agha Ali Reza about these various points and these different dimensions on how the tides are turning in the issue of Palestine. Of course, Palestine will be free from the river to the sea. We hope you had an excellent Al-Quds Day rally wherever you are. And that is all from us. Allah bless you and protect you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.